Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Joan Pride is our guest, and I'm glad she's here, too. Joan is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she's our good friend. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Hello there.
It's good to have you here.
Good to be here.
So, how long is it going to be before Ernesto deposits his little loads of rain on top of the Washington D.C.
Well, from what we hear, we have a system coming through today, but it's not Ernesto. But tomorrow we're going to get dumped on, but good.
Like mountains and mountains of rain coming bearing down on you.
Apparently, yeah.
But no wind, just rain.
Yeah, just a lot of rain, which we need. But you know, if we get that much rain, it will probably, you know, some of it's going to run off. Unfortunately, won't soak in, which is what we really want.
Mm-hmm. But if it'll replenish the the aquifers, that'll be good.
Oh, no question about it.
You guys probably need that too. But still, you're right. But I mean, there're going to be some serious flooding in parts of the Carolinas and Virginia too, aren't they?
Yeah.
There are a lot of little valleys, especially in Virginia, the mountain part of Virginia, where you can get some serious flooding up in there.
I think so, yeah.
So Ernesto is it hasn't caused a lot of trouble in Florida, but it's coming up.
Well, because you haven't had the wind that would otherwise cause the the high water.
Because it's not
a storm surge. That's what I'm trying to say.
It's now just tropical depression right now, right?
Yes.
Joan, am I the only one who's getting tired of talking about whether housing is going to cause a recession or not?
Yes.
I'm the only one. You guys apparently like this topic, don't you?
Well, you know, I think we might be a little myopic here because, as you know, the Kiplinger letter is published in Washington, D.C., and we saw, as we've talked about, the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area
housing market. The artificial economy.
Right. Been just white, I mean, literally white hot for quite a few months, and a lot of speculation. And once the speculators ran away, things changed dramatically around here.
Okay, so has there been a bubble to burst in Washington recently? Have you seen that?
Well, the air is really oozing out of it fast. I could tell you that.
Really? Well, now see, that's news. I haven't heard this.
Oh no! Oh yeah! Oh, there's been quite a downturn in house prices and more inventory on the market, and they're calling it a buyer's market now. Oh yeah.
Whereas, not even 6 months ago. And I can remember, Joan, over the last 4 or 5 years, I know you and Ray have been in the market and buying and selling and a little bit, and we've talked about that, and you've actually, there have been cases where you would put your house on the market at a price, and there'd be so many bidders, you actually would be able to sell it for more than you were asking.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, that's been over the last 3 or 4 years, right?
Now, mind you, you couldn't tell from my property tax bill that things are cooling down. That seems to be a lagging indicator.
So houses are staying in inventory longer than they were in the D.C. area.
Yes.
And so, and believe it, now let me say this to clear up any possible confusion, Joan. Prices are still unbelievably high in the D.C. area. Right, Joan? I mean, it's not like we're not talking about a deflationary thing here. We're just talking about instead of 20% increases, we're down maybe to 5% increases.
Well, no, I mean you're seeing areas where we've hit a peak and gone down, so there are housing price decreases definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. No, this is serious here.
Which surprises me in that part of the world, but the Washington D.C. real estate market is not an economy make.
Well, and the problem is not – the economy is actually very good here, but the problem has been the rampant speculation.
Which is happening in other small areas, other areas, I should say,
right.
of the country, but
right.
not in the United States as a whole.
That's right.
It's not happening in Sheboygan and Des Moines and Waco.
Yes.
It's happening in South Beach and Washington and parts of the tri-state area and maybe, you know, maybe L.A. or something like that.
Right.
but it's just not happening in Dubuque. And so that's the reason why, you know, I've been resisting the temptation to get all of Twitter over the possibility of a national housing bubble. There is no national housing market, so you can't have a national housing bubble.
Right, exactly.
So that's always irritated me whenever Mr. Greenspan got into that. It was clearly, Joan, he was doing nothing but jawboning.
Oh, that's true.
In my opinion.
He wanted to hit that irrational exuberance.
Which is hard to imagine this, Joan, but I guess maybe I need to explain. Folks, that was the former Fed chairman, Mr. Greenspan, Alan Greenspan. Joan, the economy, you guys say, and maybe you're attributing some of this to housing. I guess you are. Is going to be the economy in 2007 is going to be no more than, say, 2.5% growth?
And we say tops, and it could be closer to 2%.
Hmm. Now, see, Joan, as long as it's over 2%, between 2 and 2.5, I'm still not unhappy about that, believe it or not.
Well, yeah, I think it needs to stay above 2%. But
yeah, it definitely needs to stay above 2%.
More than 2% is okay.
Because if it gets down below 2%, that's European numbers, and it'd hurt my feelings if we got down. if we got down in the basement with those guys, it would hurt my feelings.
I can understand that.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that because then I wouldn't be able to razz those guys. I wouldn't be able to make fun of them and you know give them the raspberry over there.
Right.
But well. I don't know. I'm not sure whether I agree with you about that or not. I know one thing. The United States economy is still an amazing entity, isn't it?
Oh, no question.
I mean, it's just an amazing, it's an amazingly resilient economy. And the only thing that worries me about the economy, I'm not worried about energy prices. I'm not worried about business confidence or consumer confidence. I'm worried about the Fed's ability to their attempt to control inflation. And in the process of that, killing killing any momentum like by raising interest rates too much.
Right, and as we saw this week, you know, when the Fed declined to raise interest rates, folks were all happy and relieved. But when they released the minutes, it showed that there was a much more of a divergence than you might otherwise have thought. So
it was barely a majority.
Plenty of inflation hawks there that may want to keep raising interest rates.
Right. Well, we've got some challenges out there with the fuel prices high, which we're going to talk about when we come back in a minute. Fuel prices high and interest rates high, you could wind up with that dreaded stagflation that you've been talking about in the past. Stand by, Joan. Quick break, 20 after. I'm Jim Blasingame. Here's Hart to take us out. Welcome back, 23 after. Here's Richard Pennyman, ladies and gentlemen. That's him on the piano. This is his voice. You know him as Little Richard. How old is that song, Joan?
Long before I was born.
It's about 50 years old.
Nope. Yep, long before I was born.
But you know, Joan, the guy is still pop. I mean, the guy's still out there. Have you seen him in those commercials, those Geico commercials?
Yes, I have. Oh.
I mean, you got to tip your hat to anybody who can keep a brand going like he has.
I like the way they've directed and your listeners probably know about these Geico commercials.
Yeah.
You have a normal person telling what happened to them in a very calm voice, and then you have him embellishing it. And it's great the way they've directed the calm person to give him this look that says, "You are out of your mind."
Have you seen the one with Charo?
Oh, yeah.
That's
she looks good.
She does, doesn't she?
Because she hasn't been around for, what, 20 years?
Maybe. How about 30,
She used to be on Merv Griffin or something.
She used to be on the Carson Show all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, she looks darn good. Yeah. Coochie. All right. Joan, energy prices. Now, that is a valid argument for why the economy is not doing well. And Joan, if there's any one factor that could cause us to have stagflation, which you're going to explain to us and divine for us in a minute. If there's any one thing that could cause stagflation, it's going to be energy prices. Tell us what it is.
Remind
us what stagflation is.
Oh, it's stagflation. Oh, gee, do I?
You love doing this.
Well, because I grew up with stagflation. It was a slowing economy with rising inflation at the same time. So it was like it was a vicious cycle. You couldn't get out of it.
It's almost like deflation. It's almost like a similar kind of a situation, not similar economically, but it's similar in terms of, or maybe it's even worse than deflation, because what happens is that prices are going up with inflation,
right?
But the economy is going down, and so
the Fed doesn't have a lot of tools to fix that is to tighten interest rates, but doing that makes the economy worse.
Right. Yeah.
But that is in fact what former Fed Chairman Volcker did. He put a stranglehold on the economy, and he finally got inflation down, but it was at a very heavy price.
Two recessions in 3 years.
Yeah, but I'm not sure what else he could have done.
No, I don't know what else it took the medicine. I mean, we had to take our medicine from, and that was from years and years of letting inflation run wild and a number of other factors. But Joan, the problem is the energy prices, but especially as it results to gasoline. But I'm hearing people now say, Joan, recently that gasoline prices could be down as low as $2 by the end of the year. And we bought regular gas, 87 gas. My wife put 87 gas in her car, 87 octane in her car recently, and it was $2.58.
Wow. Okay. Well, in the Washington, D.C. area, which, as you know, has very high prices, we're below $3 now. We're about $2.80, and that's the lowest I've seen in quite a while.
Well, one of the things that we know, well, I'll tell you, let's move on.
Have a little segment on energy prices.
Yeah, the oil prices are a big deal, no question about it.
Yeah.
But you guys say the average home prices are going to stay flat. Now, do you think that that's throughout the country?
Well, see, that's the problem. That's a real generality. And if that's not going to be true in certain areas, certainly in this area, for example, they're actually going down a little bit. But I'm sure in other areas they might be going up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. You also say that the housing will play a part in slowing the job growth in the country. But Joan, you know, the thing about construction jobs is that there are a finite number of construction workers in the country.
Right.
And they're going to be building houses or roads or commercial property or rebuilding from storms, which this year we haven't had nearly as many of. Right?
That's right.
So in the past, we've had a lot of construction work to be done in the disaster areas, and that's what that's done is that sucked a lot of resources, human and otherwise, out of non-disaster areas into the disaster areas.
That's right.
I'm calling that disaster diversion. That's my new term, Joan.
Ooh, you coined a new term.
Disaster diversion, and it's so if without those disasters this year, those people can migrate, and they do migrate back into the hinterlands and start building the houses. I mean, there have been places where they couldn't get enough workers to build the houses that had been sold.
Right. That's true.
And, of course, as you know, Joan, a lot of the illegal aliens, a lot of the illegals in this country, many of those people are working construction.
Well, that's no question about that.
And not just menial jobs, Joan, like landscaping or whatever. These people are building houses. They're constructing.
They're tradesmen and craftsmen.
That's
sure.
Exactly right. They're laying brick, and it's very interesting. The construction industry would be in big trouble if all 12 million or 11 million illegals were deported today.
Well, I agree with that.
That's one of the industries that would be in really bad shape.
Yep.
So the economy is slowing a little bit, is cooling off a little bit, but I actually think we're going to see above 2.5 next year.
Okay.
I'm getting my prediction ready for next year, which I'll publish in the end of December, as you know. And I think we're going to. I just have a lot of faith in the economy, and a lot of it will have to do, Joan, as you know, it'll have to do with what gasoline prices are.
Yes.
We got more to come. Joan Pride and I have got other things that we're going to talk about right after these messages, including what's the future of Ford Motor Company. And we'll do that right after these messages. 29 after, here's Carlos Santana to take us out.
got a black magic woman.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter and check out our blog while you're there. The newsletter comes on Sunday by email. The blog comes to you by Real Simple Syndication if you want us to send it to you, or you can just come and get it and check it out every day and use it to your little heart's content. And it's not like anybody else's blog, as you won't be surprised to find out that I might do something different from other folks. So check it out there, and you've got lots and lots of archives and articles that I hope you'll use to your advantage. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And we're talking, Joan, we're back to energy. And one of the things you guys say is that this is something we all know, that the strong global demand for energy, for petroleum, is putting a solid floor under that. And you guys report that this week. And of course, now what have we got, $75 to $77 a barrel, something like that?
Yes. That's true.
But the people that I talk to, and for a couple of years now, they remind us that there's maybe a $20 to $25 currently premium on petroleum that is put there by speculation.
Oh, well, and look, we just talked about the housing market and speculators. The minute the speculators go, things really come down drastically.
If we can get that out of there, and it's an artificial increase, folks.
Right.
The people that I talk to say that the supply and demand price for petroleum should be somewhere in the neighborhood of $50 a barrel. And see, if we get that kind of a scenario, now we're looking at a couple of bucks a gallon for gasoline.
And we're looking at a Fed that may not be as worried about inflation, I would think.
And not stagflation.
Right. Well, and what have they got to worry about if the housing market in hot regions is cooling off and energy prices are lower?
Exactly. Well, Joan, you know, when I think about the U.S. economy and what it's capable of creating, and I think about what would happen if we had lower petroleum prices, we weren't worried about a war on terror. Can you imagine what this country could create?
Boy.
I mean, the capability. Because if small businesses had, you know, these higher energy prices and higher interest prices, Joan, those are tantamount to taxes for us.
Oh, sure.
That just sucks our capital, our very precious, very limited capital out of our businesses. If we had access to that capital, if we had that money back, we could do a lot of things that we're not able to do right now.
That's true, yeah.
It's holding us back. Joan, let's talk about, by the way, natural gas. I want to get this out. Natural gas is going to be up by the end of the year, you guys report.
Right, and pretty substantially. We say it's $7 per BTU now and could be up as high as $10 or even $12. So that could be tough for, you know, the winter.
And heating oil for the Northeast, where they use a lot of that, is up 30 cents a gallon on average.
Wow, yeah.
So that's not good. Joan, let's move down and talk about Ford Motor Company. That's an interesting organization, isn't it?
No good news here, though, unfortunately.
Yeah. I drive Fords, by the way, folks. I've been a Ford man for a long time.
And my
I like their
family
product.
Does too.
I like their products.
Right.
We have two and are about to buy another one. And have for a long time. I don't know how many Fords I bought. So this is not making me happy to say this, but you know, Joan, the Bill Ford is the great grandson of the founder. The one of the greatest industrialists and one of the greatest entrepreneurs this country has ever produced.
Yes.
It's probably time to get the nepotism out of the C-level offices.
That's what people are saying.
I was reading the other day, he's actually performing the chairman, the CEO, and maybe even some of the he's performing like all or parts of two or three jobs up there, and I don't know what's going on up there.
Sounds like an awful lot.
Yeah. Well, I don't think, you know, Ford has different problems from General Motors, don't they?
Well, yeah, I think
they've got, they actually have products that people want. GM's got a lot of products people don't want. But GM has, I think GM may have a lot more union problems than a lot more people employed that aren't working than Ford.
Well, when I think of GM, I just think of the whole benefits problem immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know the extent to which Ford has the same problems, but they certainly do have problems because, and we even say that they're thinking about going private, but we're not even sure that that's going to help that much.
And the only thing, the quick fix that they're working on is to sell their financial unit, which is, I really hate seeing companies do that because that's the profitable part.
Yeah, you would think that
you hate
would,
to see them selling off their babies, don't you?
Right. Exactly.
That sounds like a bad thing to do. All right, stand by. Quick break. 20 till. When we come back, we're going to talk about some HR stuff, like health savings accounts and some new things that you can do as an employer with your employees with regard to HSAs. 20 till, stay with us. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, let's talk about that website you guys got, which is a good one, folks. I encourage you to check it out. It's kiplinger.com, and you can subscribe to their publications there, but you can also check out some of the information that they have. They have a lot of good stuff there that I encourage you to check out. I use it myself. And if you want to get back into the bowels of the website, though, and see where all the really good stuff is, you need to be a subscriber, and which also entitles you to their publications, which you can choose all or one. One of them is the flagship, which is the one Joan and I work off of. And they're coming up on an anniversary, Joan. Let's see, 83 years?
I think so.
I think it's 83 years this
month. Yeah, since 1923.
Yeah. And that's the Kiplinger letter that comes every Friday or Monday, depending on how you get it, by email or by hard copy.
And you get it both ways.
I get it both ways. I can't get enough of it. And then there's the three biweeklies, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter for our great farmers out there. And then, Joan, there's a magazine, too.
You bet. Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Which you can find on newsstands. And so check those out.
Right.
Joan, why don't you give us that toll-free number, too?
Sure. Our 800 number is 800-544-0155.
What about, Joan, the health savings accounts thing? What's the news there with regard to employers using HSAs to help with some flexibility?
Well, we're saying that they're going to be able to use contributions as incentives to get workers to join disease management and wellness programs, which, as you know, is really important. If you can get workers healthier, they're going to have lower not only lower health insurance bills, but also be more productive and be at work more.
There are a number of elements to getting control of health care and the costs, the associated costs in this country. One of the big ones is wellness.
Right. That's huge. And if you think about a lot of diseases such as diabetes, type 2 diabetes, that may be possible to be prevented through diet or at least controlled by diet.
And smoking programs, stopping smoking programs, weight programs, and all those things. So there are a lot of different things there, Joan, that are involved in those. And I've interviewed companies on this show who had held their costs down to the low single digits, the cost increases down, because some of them had been on wellness programs with their employees for 30 years, and now they're reaping the benefits of that.
Gee.
And it's the right thing to do. It keeps people healthier.
Sure.
Never mind the company, the people are better off.
Right, absolutely.
But these HSAs, Joan, HSAs are going to turn out to be, well, you know, we've looked back, Joan, and say that Social Security was a great thing that was developed. We're going to look back and decide that HSAs was one of the greatest things to be developed for in terms of programs for individuals.
I sure hope so.
Yeah. When we think of health savings accounts, typically, Joan, we think of them as what individuals buy for themselves, like the one that I have.
Right.
But companies are able to, with the latest law, companies are able to offer these and to contribute to these for their employees and use it as part of the benefits package.
Right, and there's a lot of tax savings there when you do that, both for the employer and the employee.
Exactly, absolutely. Joan, there's an uptick in discrimination lawsuits by employees. What's going on there?
Right. This is interesting. It usually has to do with family leave when folks take time off to take care of their children or aging parents.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's problems in terms of not getting their job back when they return to work or not being allowed to take the time or whatever. And we're just, you know, alerting employers to this trend and making sure, you know, telling companies to make sure they have clear policies about this and supervisors that are trained on how to handle these kinds of issues.
Well, you give a website here, and I don't want you to give the whole thing, but let them find it. Give us, it's www.uchastings.com. I mean, sorry, .edu.
Right, so it's UCHAS. I guess it's UC Hastings is probably.
UC Hastings.
It looks
okay.
Like UC Hastings, but I think it's UCHastings.edu.
Okay. And you'll need to look for employee policies,
right.
That kind
well,
of thing.
And we're talking about the Center for Work-Life Law, and I think if you go to that website, you'll probably find an icon for the Center for Work-Life Law.
And that would be how to find the kinds of policies that will help you to make sure that you don't get into a potential lawsuit.
Right.
Okay, Joan, let's move over and talk about the global business. There's a growing anti-Americanism that's hurting the U.S. trade. Is that happening?
Well, we're actually saying it's not hurting U.S. trade for the moment. You know, people want to buy our goods, so they're still doing it. There
right.
is anger at our foreign policy, but we still make good stuff, and people want to buy it.
You know what's interesting to me, Joan, the irony of people who are angry at our foreign policy. They might not like some of the things that we do, but they like the fact that we have a foreign policy. Because that foreign policy, that U.S. foreign policy means, I mean, these are countries, some of these countries are countries who in the past have dialed 911, and they were
yeah.
glad that it rang in Washington, D.C.
Right.
And if they, and part of their foreign policy, a lot of these countries, is, okay, first thing we do is we dial 911, and the United States will come and help us. So, you know, that's one of the ironies to me of some of this over there. And I know that's not the intent of this piece here, but it just when I hear about anti-Americanism, it really makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck.
Right.
I can't help it. Okay, Joan, the other things that the companies are doing some things, though, you guys point out about this, about the trade, by building local connections wherever they're investing abroad, aren't
they? Sure helps.
Yeah, getting close to the local community. And I encourage you to think about that. Those of you who are exporting and doing business overseas, get to know the people you're doing business with. Get some local presence there. It'll make a lot of difference. Quick break. We got more to come right after these messages. Stay with us. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, small business advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest. Joan, one of the things you guys report on this week is a law that will promote electronic health records. Now, my daughter is a nurse, and they are now charting electronically.
Well, it's about time.
Well, they've been doing it for a while, but they're having trouble getting the doctors to do it. The doctors don't like it.
Yeah, see, that kills me. If you think about it, when you go in the hospital, everybody should be able to look at your electronic chart, and there would never be drug interactions.
Right.
There would never be, I can't say it would never be mistakes, but I would think it would cut down on mistakes and it would improve care.
Well, what about the sharing of information?
Yeah, well.
You know, I mean, now, before electronics, if you went from one hospital to another one, they had to send all those written records over.
Exactly.
So, now, this is a good thing. I'm glad to see this, and I think it's going to help improve the overall industry, actually, and hopefully we'll save some money too. Joan, let's move over and talk about Hurricane Katrina's impact on the financial services industry, specifically the insurance companies.
Right.
What's going on there?
Well, you know, as we say, that insurers are spooked, and it's very hard to get them to sell policies in the states that were affected by Katrina and also the other hurricanes that hit on the Gulf and in Florida.
Well, can you blame them?
No. Insurance is a funny thing, though, because insurers don't make money.
And you don't mean funny, ha-ha.
Oh, no, no. I mean, it's sort of counterintuitive because you need the insurance in case you have to call upon it, but the insurers do better if you don't call upon it.
Right. Well, the problem that I got with what's going on in the insurance business is that to the degree that they're covering people in the storm prone areas, but spreading some of that cost around those of us who don't live there.
Right.
And see, I think that's already happening with liability insurance. I think the insurance companies see more than five years ago, before 9/11.
Yeah.
Which, Joan, as you know, we got an anniversary coming up in a little over a week.
Absolutely.
Liability insurance was really very inexpensive. Now it's very expensive.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced that I know that's because Warren Buffett, who owns a lot of insurance companies through his organization or is investing in them, he said, we weren't charging enough.
Oh, see.
And they fixed that now. And so, you know, most of Americans don't live in terrorist-prone areas where we're likely to have a terrorist attack.
Right.
But yet our liability insurance is a lot more expensive.
Yeah, that's a problem.
And so I wonder how much of my house insurance, how much of my car insurance is being impacted by the storms that we've had. And by
I'm sure a bit, at least. Absolutely.
I sent you an email yesterday about the argument that, you know, some people want insurance companies to pay for their losses, but their losses were because of floods.
Well, but one of the problems in addition to that is you have the question of wind or water.
Right.
And they're saying wind and the insurance companies are saying water, and I don't know how you sort that out.
Well, here's how you distinguish it, Joan. Uh-huh. The people in Waveland, Mississippi, where the hurricane came ashore,
yeah,
their houses blew away, and the falling rain, when the wind blew it away and the falling rain destroyed some of their property, that is a normal property and casualty claim. 30 minutes later, when a 25-foot rising storm surge came in, whatever damage it did is rising water. That's flood water, which is covered by flood insurance. If you don't have flood insurance, then you don't collect for that damage. The challenge, though, Joan, is to find out how your property was damaged. Was it wind, falling water, or rising water?
That's hard. And then going forward, too, you know, that's kind of been the dirty little secret of the flood insurance program. A lot of people
right.
who should have flood insurance don't, and the federal government has had trouble forcing them to, because unless you have a mortgage on the house
right.
and your mortgager requires it, there's nothing to force you to have flood insurance when a lot of people should have it.
Well, and if you are in the floodplain, your mortgage company will require you to. But the thing about it, Joan, is some people in the last few years have been getting flooded who weren't in the floodplain.
Well, that's true, too.
Because of some of these
right.
storms. Hey, Joan, thank you for being here. Good job
hey,
today,
thank you,
as always.
Thank you.
See you
okay.
next time. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. And as you know, this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.